I'll turn the tape over. That's the end of that side, and this is side number two of this number four tape.
Well, now, I'm going to put a little on here first. I've come over here. There's a little Indian boy brought me down from the store to Van Diver's cabin, and I've been visiting for the last couple of hours pretty nearly with old Van in the cabin here, and he's been telling me more stories. And I mentioned, would he like to say a few words to Frank Young and some of the other old pioneers over there? So we'll let Van tell his greeting.
Well, that's, it's...
Frank Young. Yeah, we... And Dolly, you just talk at it, just like you talk to me.
Hello, Frank.
And Dolly.
Uh-huh.
And Dolly, his wife.
And Mrs. Young.
And all the kids.
And all the family. Mm-hmm. Good, I guess. How's everything your way?
That's what's coming over here.
You're coming up to see me. 17th, are you? Well, I'll be looking for you now.
Tell them you just had your whole family here.
Huh? I wish I had the whole family here to visit. There ain't many dozen people left now. They're all pretty well cleaned out. I don't remember now. But
who do you mean in Dawson?
No. The fellas that that's killing there that had to keep their mouths shut.
You mean at Skagway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was five or six of us there. Young fellas got together. Anyway, it's the first time you've heard of old Whiskey Sullivan. You see, my brother, you remember. Old Whiskey Sullivan bought the whiskey in here and run the steamboats. Well, he come in to the saloon there. It wasn't Sophie's place, and he come up and he says, nudged me, and I never spoke to the man. Oh, he's a big burly son of a gun. He says, who's that fella down there? He says, stopping that dog tent with you, he says. And I said, that's my brother. And he says, I wonder if I could hire that man. I said, now you're talking. I said, I'm sure. I said, he's got no outfit. And it's just about dead broke, I said, in the can. So I wouldn't mind having a job. So somebody giving me the wink that he was taking in liquor, you see, but I know nothing about that. But anyway, he hired it. Well, we helped pack that liquor over the pass, but coming over, when it was getting right in, when we started over the pass, the first outfit, these young fellas, and I was one of them, got together like young fellas will, you know. And it was, the town was started out with their backs together. And so Tommy O'Hara was ahead. And he come to this fella, and his only gamester in the white past, you see. It's the only man that saw him there was having games like they did on the Silkwood. And so anyway, Tommy got ahead, and he come up and he says, he got to play on this fella. And so, anyway, some fella come along, and he says, Tommy, get away from that. That game's crooked, he says. Don't play that man, he says. This fella reached into the into the box there that he had and pulled a great hog leg out on right up there. He said, no man can call my game crooked, he said, and live. This fellow walked up there. He says, I call your game crooked, he says. I call you a crook, he says. Your game is crooked, he says. The fellow turned just as white as snow. Now he says, I'm telling you what you do. He says, you don't let me catch you here in 3 days, I'm coming back. Don't let me catch you here, he says. Don't let me catch you down in Skagway. You're not safe there when I'm in Skagway, he says. Of course, it'll kill you, he says. You'd better be on the move, he says. And so I never found out what that fella done. But this same fella, he never get to the courtroom. He's back in where he come from. They didn't lynch him. Yes, sir. I was Billy the Mug. You heard of, did you hear Billy the Mug? That's the time that Klondike was running, was open, you see. Billy the Mug had a saloon in Seattle. And his place was something a little like Sophie Smith's, you know. It wasn't run exactly.
Oh, that was down Yesler Way.
Huh?
Down on Yesler. That's down on Yesler Way. The town was called Yesler.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this fella come in and put his hand on my shoulder, and I looked up. I said, "What's your name?" "John Cross." He said, "John Cross." "Well, now," I said, "it better be something else. We haven't been using that for some time," I said. And I said, "Keep away from me." I said, "I know. You know that I was there when you done that shooting. Had nothing to do with it," I said. "But," I said, "they're after me too, just the same. If they take me back there, there's a chance there that I'll get in trouble. You see, he killed this woman and shot her. And so anyway, John, but I looked for that fellow on the white path. I looked for him to kill that fellow there, that gambler, you know. So he'd kill in a wink, you know. One of them regular old mountaineers, you know. But then, the different thing, John Cross was around there when Sophie Smith was killed, you see. A different thing. So John Cross went to the lower river. They never got him anyway. This shepherd, John Cross, was right of what he done. John Cross was a nice man. This shepherd is tricked. He'd killed a couple of men before. He'd killed six men. His revenue were what he was. Is that at this big reunion? So did reunion. And anyway, he was he killed this fellow's brother. This John Cross's brother that had been here. And so anyway, it wasn't a fair fight, he said. They took advantage. And there's one woman some way in that. That's how he come to get by with it. And so when they started shooting, the woman jumped in his way, so it was plain. I didn't see it. I wasn't right by when it was done. And so anyway, me and Arthur Summers, he was from West Virginia, same as I was, a relation of mine, and we were running with this fella. And Summers, he was running on the lumber train there with this fella. And of course, went with him. He had to stay with him, you know. And so when the shooting was over, and so the fellas come up to this fellow and ordered him out of town. "Get out, get on the run." "No, sir," he says, "I'm not running one damn foot," he says. He says, "My feet wasn't built to run on," he says. "I'm not running." "Look here, there's 15 revenuers down there in the town. Whenever they hear this, you know what'll happen. I don't give a damn what happens. I can't afford to run," he said. "Well, I never did run or never will," he said. And so anyway, Arthur Summers come up and tried to get him to run. No, sir, wouldn't move. And here this silly old man is getting gray, and he had a chin beard here, and he come up and called him by name. And of course, John Cross wasn't the fellow at all. Called him by name. He says, "You get out of here." He says, "I'm not going." The old man says, "You are going. I'm telling you, I'm running this place, and you're a gone," he says. "Now, you can just dwell easy on that," he says. He says, "There's going to be a lot of men killed here today." He says, "Brother will be running thick," he says, "when them revenuers comes up here and finds out what happened." And so anyway, something will come for him. He says, mind what the old man says. He have some sense. So he left then. But I'd like to know who that old man was and what he amounted to now. You don't know, sir. But he just looked fierce at him, you know. Chancellor is a long, old time revenue, you know. Yes, sir. Well, John Cross, he lived in Alaska. Not your life, I guess. And a fellow lived down. Oh, lots of murderers, killers in here, you know. And lived their natural life.
As long as they behave themselves. As long as they behave themselves.
Oh, yes, yeah. This, what's his name now? He worked 6 miles above the farm down here. He was, just putting his college name now. He was Ricardo Nagel. And he made some money and he went outside. He found his wife in a bed with another man. He killed his wife and he fell and come back in here. The last I heard of him, he went to the Lower River. And just living in that. Webster,
that's his name.
Yeah. Awful nice fella. And he said on a murder case here of Indians. This Indian, they went in and told about the murder. The old mission, there's no law here. The old mission was a law. He was a judge. And of course, he would try a case and then refer it to the, if they were convicted, why, then he'd notify the police, you see, or notify the officers the way that is managed. And Webster, him and this old mission, they tried a murder case there. But then he come here and everything right. Him murder himself, you know. kind of funny, you know, the way it would work. Oh, Jordan, I can never think. Get the bottle. Go on.
Look, Short is watching a raft being built across the river here. This is the Pelly River, and I'm sitting in Van Bibber's house looking out the window here at this beautiful river. And Shorty is Van Bibber's wife.
Whiskey, Shorty. That's what we used to call her. She used to like liquor, you know. When you're the way I thought about, we'd have a bottle. Once I get talking, I forget everything.
Well, I don't care much about the drinking anyhow.
Well, for when you're thirsty, I like beer, you see.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Drink a beer. But I never drink to get drunk anymore, you know. No.
Well, you've had a lot of fun in your life, and you sure got a big family.
Look!
How many kids are yours now? How many have you got?
Huh?
Can you name the your youngsters? Can you name the youngsters?
The
children.
Young ones. Grandchildren, I don't know whether good or not.
How many you got?
Well, now I'd have to count that.
Too many to count, huh?
There's around about 35 or 6, something like that, you know. And, well, I tell you, we can get to have a drink there and you can make it in a minute. Get your book, get your pencil. I had to go back to move them all in our beddings back to Mayo. And that was too much. I could take 700 pounds, but it run in about 1,200 pounds when I figured it out. And I said to Jim McNeil, I said, there's two Indians haven't got a job, I said. I said, put them on. Can't do it, he says. Why not? Not allowed to, he says. Oh, it made me sore, you know. I said, now you're allowed to. I said, right now. I said, your damn stuff can lay right here and rot as far as I care. And I'm not, won't touch a bit of a pound of it, he says. And he put the Indians on and moved to Mayo in fine shape. Nothing to it, you see. My darned law, you see, that cuts no figure. When the law's wrong way, write it. It's the way to do the people write it. It's the way to do that. No, sir. Native couldn't get a job works or in public works at all, not a bit of it.
Well, I hired them all during the war.
Yeah. Oh, don't wait, do you?
I got the government law to go by.
Yeah.
See? I didn't make the rules. They were handed to me. Well, now, Van Bibber just told me he's got one son, Pat, with four children, and one son, George, with five children, and J.J. with four children, Lita with two, and Elisa with two, Alex with two, Lucy with four, and May with six, and Richard with two, and Jay Brown with two. That
now
makes...
You made a mistake, you see. Lucy's got, or no, what am I? May has two grandchildren. You didn't mention them.
Well, yeah, four and two, six.
Oh, that's the way, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right, that leaves five and four is nine. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. And 6 is 28, 30. That's 32. Is that about it? 32 children and great-grandchildren.
Yeah. That must be it.
You just got a small family.
He got ginger girl. He got my. He got one.
This old Burnett in Mayo, he'd been to the outside. And he's talking about his trip. And he says, I was go down there with my friend there in the car, and we stop at this fellow's place, and see, while he was talking to the fellow there, why, I knew the kid there was running around. And so I said to him, when he started on, that fellow sure has lots of kid there. And, oh, no, he's got no kid. Yes, but I see lots of kid there. No, he's only got 18. I show you a bunch of kids, he said. Went on down the top, 23 children, he said, in that family down there. Them Canadian friends, you know.
23 children.
Yes, sir. He's telling me about that, you know. There's something I won't tell you, and you won't believe it. We were 18 months on the Nahanni, South Nahanni, and we traveled over a lot of that country, in that Headless Valley country, you know. And no man never was as happy as I was at my leisure. Nobody could tell me anything. No, sir. And you'd think you'd better get lazy. No, sir. My attention was drawn to prospecting there and tinkering, going on, you know. No, sir. My time was occupied, you know. Was happy, so contented, my God, man. There we had, and we was 8 months on, we had tobacco and tea and cattages as our Boston Club. Now you can figure what kind of eating that was now. 8 months of that time we was in there, you know. And I was so happy, you know. And oh, plenty of moves, plenty of game, you know. You wouldn't think a fellow would surely have something sometime, but no, sir, I was perfectly contented. Her and I now, and I guess she's as well contented as I was, too. But when I went away, and I was long gone, 8 or 10 days, I don't know, paid no attention. She said it was a lifetime. And, I got under three big trees hanging over the water and raining. And you couldn't get me out of that. And I was catching fish in the river there and eating fish. That's what I was living on, and, you know. And perfectly dry under the tree there. Last several days under there, you know. And then I started out, and I noticed this hummock like that. And I went out on that. Looked down in the swamp there, and so there was two moose feeding around. That started happening. I took the wind, and I thought I had the wind good, but I don't know. The moose got out and got over, and they got into a deep wash out of a slough. And, so I tracked them to the edge of that, And it went down in there, and I come along to the slough, and I come right over this moose, right on its back there. Raining hard, pouring the rain down, and snap, snap, and throwed every shell out of the gun. Oh, no fire. And that moose went out on the bar there, and it run up and down the bar calling. Oh, you know, the call just like grizzly bear, pretty much, you know. And anyway, it went out there. I'd greased my gun. I know what was the matter. I'd greased my gun with porcupine. Greasing out of gums, you see. And then the cool weather and rain, like that of the gum, and it wouldn't bust the cap. I sit down there, and I cleaned that. Got a part of a sack out of my pack sack, and a rolled old sack, and cleaned it thoroughly. Then I threw the shell in and fired it. I know it's all right. Started out across country. Took a big moose trail. Traveled that trail, and I come to a river, big river. And that river was in flood. Well, I wouldn't cross it, and it was bigger than the South Niner. It just looked to me as big, and so I turned back. Now I think they call that the West Fork of the South Niner. Anyway, coming back, and I was tired of fish. Oh, if I get a moose, you know, get a piece of meat, oh. So anyway, in that swamp was the first skinny canick I'd seen in the country there, and I was cutting of that to take up to the camp, an armful up there, and I had the gun down that way. And click, click, and noise, and looked up, and right going up onto the bench was a big cow moose. And she'd come right down on top of me there and didn't see me, you know, and turn and run. I dropped that and throwed the gun up and fired. Well, I hit her in the hip here and broke the hip. And she went right over there and fell in some windfalls. And the guy went up and dressed her and skinned out what I wanted. And oh, she was fat and nice too. And so when I come down, here was water bubbling up, pouring up, you know. And so I think so I'll wash my hands and clean up. When I dipped my hands into that water, it scalded me, you know, it was hot water.
You cooked your moose almost, huh?
Yes, it was hot water.
Yep. We stopped a minute here to watch a man make a raft and come across the Pelly River. A man and a woman on this raft, and they're really wrestling the oars.
Both come up and land on the other side. And I went out. Instead of landing here, what kind of people is that? God, Jesus Christ. And so anyway, I went down there and I said, come over. What'd you land on that side for? He said, well, it was just to go to come over, they said. And they come over and they met when they were coming up. They met a raft down around the bend here. Indians had their dogs and their outfit all on that big raft, you see, going down. And when they got here, they asked me, what was that we met down there? That? And I said, that's a raft. I said, that's the Indian style of traveling. I said, they travel by raft down the stream. My goodness, how'll they get that back up the river? So most of them come up. He says, we've got an awful nice crew, he says. He says, they don't know nothing, he says. I says, I noticed that the two fellows up here. And he laughed and he tried to get me to tell what the break they'd made. Now, I wouldn't tell him, you know. No, sir. But they were certainly green now, you know. Of course, they were college fellows, had that.
Mr. Van Bibber wants to know if Nick Nichols alive in the Pioneer home there at Dawson City. When I get there, I'll try to find out. Well, I've had about 4-hour visit with Van Bibber and his wife and the family, and I took several pictures of the family, and I took a couple of pictures of the Pelly River Bridge, and I'm starting out now. It is 9:10 in the evening of this time right here. I stopped at the Stewart River Roadhouse. It's an excellent place to eat, and there's a very good cook there. And the time now is 10:30 p.m. p.m. And I'm going across the Stewart River Bridge heading for Dawson. It's about 130 miles or so to Dawson City. Well, the sign here says 113 miles into Dawson. I'm just crossing the McQuestion River Bridge. Everything's going good. The time is 11:40 p.m. in the evening and almost midnight, and I just saw a dead black bear laying by the road. Believe it or not. A cute little red fox just went across the road in front of me with his white tipped tail, too. His eyes are shining in my headlights. Another little red fox just went across the road. They're playing like a bunch of kittens around here. Well, another little red fox went across the road. Well, this road is a gravel road, and it's a wonderful road. It isn't bumpy or choppy. Just there's a little loose gravel on it, but it's an excellent road otherwise. And I've seen considerable game tonight. Also, the fireweed is showing up along the road. Pretty reddish purple, bluish purple. And that means that the greater part of our summer is almost gone. We'll be going into the fall very shortly. There goes another cute little fox right down the road in front of me. This is a baby fox. Oh, he's just having a time running me a race. Yeah, he's a pretty thing. Oh, he's a pretty boy. He's just having lots of fun, ain't you, baby? He's just staying right in front of the car. He's making about 20 miles an hour. He's going to get tired after a bit. Them feet's just a-flying. Now he's off. He's a pretty red thing. Well, the time is now 1 o'clock in the morning. And I've just passed the Dawson Airport that's 12 miles from Dawson City. This road from Whitehorse comes right by the airport out here on the gravel piles. Well, the time is 1:40 and I have got into McAllister's log cabin court where I stayed last year while I was in Dawson, and he's given me a room here and I'll see him in the morning. Well, I got up this morning about 8:30 and had a cup of coffee here with the mouse and the McAllisters, and then I went visiting Katie McLennan and went down to her little house with her and took some stuff down there. And then I come back and I went and visited Butterworth, Jack Butterworth and his wife at the store. And then I went downtown and visited with some other people and come over to Katie McLennan's again and met Ennis Taylor and had a little visit with him. And then I went and had the car cleaned up. So I think I'll stay here another day or so in Dawson. And there's several people here that I want to visit while I'm in Dawson. I'm taking a few pictures occasionally. I took one of the little baby taking a bath out here with all her good clothes on. Kind of cute. And I think that'll... Well, I'm going downtown and visit their Klondike night, I think, for a little while. It's 10 minutes after 7 now, and I'll see you later. Well, at 8 o'clock this evening, after I had dinner in the Monte Carlo, I went to the Klondike night at the old opera house here in Dawson, and the local talent put on a real excellent show, and they had a little movie, and they played some bingo games with funny money and blackjack and roulette, and put on a real good show. And the
fair, the admission was only $1.50, which I think was very reasonable. These folks really put their effort in this show. And I personally would invite people from all over to come and see it. So that's 30 for tonight. And the time is now 12:05 midnight.
Well, I got up this morning about 7 o'clock, and there's been several tourists pulled into the McAllister's log cabin court. There's some of them I've seen along the way. I've met them several times, and they recognized my car and come over and talk to me. And then I went downtown a little bit and come back at 9:30 and had coffee with Katie and visited for an hour or so. And I decided I was going to go visit the Franklins out at the mine. I saw Glenn yesterday in town, and so I'm going to get ready, and I'm on my way out to the mine. And going out, I've seen several old cabins, some of them occupied and some not. And how far is it out here?
16 miles.
16 miles? Well, it seems like 60 with all those curves.
Over the painting pile.
Now, I'm visiting now with Mrs. Franklin here. Used to be an old-time Fairbanks resident. And her husband is quite busy. He's rattling around with his mining machinery, and he had a cat breakdown, so he's going to scoot downtown and get some fuel. Now, you said I'd like to have you say a few words to your friends in Fairbanks and the park board.
Hello, everybody. This is on El Dorado in the Dawson area in Yukon Territory. We're on the Lucky Swede's claim, and we're hoping very much that some of the luck of the Lucky Swede is going to rub off on us. We have a small placer operation up here with three cats, and we have found one of the largest nuggets in the area to be found at this time. Glenn feels that one of the old-timers probably left it for us. It has been nice talking with you. It's been nice visiting with Mr. Hughes. Goodbye and good luck.
Bye.
I want you to tell me something, Mrs. Franklin. Tell me where the daughters are and their full names on here and what they're doing.
We have two children, Ina Lucille Franklin, who was born in Fairbanks in 1940, is now a medical technologist at the Virginia Mason Hospital in Seattle. Glenna Marie Franklin, who was born in Fairbanks in 1945, is now graduated from high school and has a scholarship to attend Seattle University next year. And this summer she is employed at the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce in Dawson.
Thank you. The little girl, I remember so much about when I come here on the other trip. You sent her around to let me show me around the place so I wouldn't get lost. And I appreciate that. And I was kind of anxious to have her. Well, I'll try to catch her in town.
We'll be sure to come with that.
Okay.
All right.
I'll say 30 for this moment, and the time now is 5 minutes after 1 p.m. in the afternoon of July the 10th, 1963. I'm out on this creek in the Dawson area. I'll be heading back for town shortly.
I've taken several pictures along here since I left Glenn Franklin's mining on Lucky Swede claim. And these are the Trollberg brothers, the president of the Yukon Order Pioneers and his brother. And they're hydraulicking up here and doing some washing. They're washing out a cut. I've taken several pictures, exposures here. And I've used the telephoto lens because they're up on early day three Swedes worked this area.
Well, I come on into Dawson and I visited the Dawson Museum in the old government building. They have a fairly good start on a display. Mr. Innes Taylor is on the board there helping to set up that museum. A number of tourists stopped to see it. And they're very, very interested here in us in Fairbanks getting our project rolling.
Now this evening I will be running some pictures for Mr. and Mrs. McAllister's fallen mother here on a visit. I will be running some slides, color slides for their...
Well, I had quite a crowd of tourists, and Mr. and Mrs. McAllister's father and mother were there. A very dignified, white-bearded gentleman, and a little nice little old lady. And they had quite a crowd in there. We had some tourists and some local people to see the slides that I run. I run about a little over, around half of the slides, I guess, altogether. So they got a little insight into Alaska and Ketchikan and some of the golden days and the parades and stuff. I made a mistake on the date on the previous announcement there at the Franklin Mine. It was July the 9th. Today is July the 10th. This is Wednesday, July the 10th, and I'm preparing to load the car to start traveling back towards Fairbanks. The time now is 10 minutes to 10 a.m. in the morning of July the 10th, 1963, and I've just crossed on the government ferry from Dawson City to cross over to the highway on the Alaska side. I'm going now west and south to Boundary and the border. The time is 10 minutes to 12 noon, and I'm at 4,515 feet elevation at this point on the road from Dawson City to Boundary. Well, I got to George King and Dorothy King's place, and I found George Gelberson driving a cat here, and I took four or five pictures around there. Went in and had a sandwich at King's. Went out and said goodbye to everybody, and I'm on my way, and the time now is changed. 1 hour. I lost another hour. It's now 1:30 our time here. I stopped at Bob McComb's roadhouse at North Fork here, or West Fork, what do they call it? And Bob is not in, and I talked to Dorothy and the mother, and several people come in. Lil Angerman's daughter come in with her husband, and I'm delivering the mail for him. So I'm on my way again back to the highway. It's about 75 miles from here to the Alcan. The time now is straight up 6 o'clock, and I've checked in through Tok and the Tourist Bureau and filled with gas at Tok Junction. The speedometer rating was 4,031 miles from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I purchased this car. Well, this is the end of this trip. I've landed back home, filled the car with gas, and went over to see Henry, my landlord, and he has his family, or somebody's relation here with him, his sister and two sisters. And I'm unpacked the car, and I'm getting ready for bed. So I'll say the date on here is July the 10th. July the 10th, 1963, and it's after midnight, so it's July the 11th. The morning of July the 11th, and I've completed my 10,000-mile trip from Fairbanks to Washington, D.C., and back by the way of Indianapolis, Minnesota, and Minneapolis, and Moose Jaw, Swift Current, Calgary, Red Deer, Edmonton, White Horse, Pelly River, Dawson City, and back to Fairbanks, 10,595 miles. And I'm just taking it a little bit easy right now.
the morning, and I'll continue on my report on this tape. I had a very good little interview here with this gentleman with Pioneer Village, in just out of Edmonton. This is reel number 4 of the trip from Fairbanks to Washington, D.C., and return to Fairbanks. The time now is 12:20, and I'm on Highway Route 43, Alaska Highway now. I've left Pioneer Village. I've had a good visit and saw a lot of things. I've learned a lot of things, met some good people, and I'll be heading towards Dawson Creek, Yukon Territory, some 450 miles from here.
The time is now 12:30, and I've come to another Pioneer Museum on my way north from Edmonton, and I'm going to stop and take a couple of pictures of it.
Got a visit with this lady at this little museum. They have a local historical society located here at this place, and she is a member of it, and they hire her for $45 a month to look after this place and keep it open. It's a log structure with a shingle roof, and she's doing all the fixing and painting. She's did some miniature work there. She's got a little 5-room house complete in miniature with all the furniture and pictures and everything, and the dinnerware is hammered out of ammunition shells. She's taken and flattened out the brass and hammered them out and polished them for little dishes and little plates and trays. She is carrying a Canadian flag and a U.S. flag under it at the museum here. She's got a very nice setup. She's worked hard at it. She has considerable bones around, and she's painting the front porch right now. So that's about all I can say at this place.
Stopped here. There's been a derailment on the Canadian National Railway here, right along the highway. There's 4 or 5 cars. One turned up on the side, the others are dumped over, and the crews are starting to work putting them back on the track. I crossed the McLeod River and the Athabascan River, and I'm on my way again towards Dawson Creek. There's a great big link just across the road in front of me, but the light's so dull, it's overcast, and he didn't give me a chance to take a picture of him. I'm crossing House River, and there's a bridge here, and there's a nice campsite, room for probably 50 cars, maybe more. And I see a bunch of kids in swimming in that water in that river, so it must be fairly warm. I've only met 3 cars with Alaska license today. They all seem to be mostly Canadian cars on the road here and trucks. Of course, I'm traveling with the traffic towards Alaska. I've been traveling through oil fields for quite a while. There's an awful lot of drilling going on up here, and there's many truckloads of pipe and equipment. I see them assembling rigs along the road back here a little ways. So there's camps all over here. There are trailer camps and portable camps. Even I see a few in tent houses. Well, I filled up with gas again, and I pulled up down here to a marker marking an old historical incident in the territory of Alberta and Saskatchewan. And I met a couple here that know a lot of people in Fairbanks, and I'll let them put their name on here.
Hello, this is Dickie and Lyle Kreidler. We're traveling from Tacoma up over the highway partway. Lee, if you ever hear this in Fairbanks, hi from us. Don't forget now, we're thinking about you.
Say hello to the rest of your friends.
Well, I'm not sure how many of them are still there. Some of them have gone. Larry, meet. This is Dickie Leland Kreidler. Haven't seen you for quite a few years, but we did stop in to see you about 20 years ago at the bank there. You'll remember us. And Manny, if you ever listen to this, Olson, this is Dickie. Greetings from a long time ago.
Yeah, Manny's quite a night hawk, you know. I worked in the hotel one time years ago there, a night clerk. Did you want to say something?
No, I don't know anything.
Well, the husband's bashful. He won't talk, so I'll terminate this.
crossing the Smoky River Bridge, and there's a campground here for public, and I see quite a few cars in it. It's really pretty well loaded, and this is a nice spot. It's overcast and cloudy a little, and there's been a few drops of rain, but this road is in excellent shape, and this is part of Trans-Canada, heading towards Dawson Creek and Grand Prairie. The next town of any size I come into will be Grand Prairie. There's some heavy bolts of lightning ahead of me towards Grand Prairie, and I saw the first time lightning throw a complete loop. It made a complete loop, did like a big spiral, and just disappeared. It's 70 degrees at 9 o'clock at Grand Prairie, and I'm leaving. It's 85 miles to Dawson's Creek from here. I've just crossed the boundary into British Columbia from Alberta, and there's a weighing station, inspection station, where you enter British Columbia. The time is now 5 minutes after 10, Mountain Standard Time.
Well, this morning, it's July the 5th, 1963, at Dawson Creek. It's 9 o'clock in the morning now, and it's bright and sunshiny. I've been awful sick. I eat something down the way here, 50 miles back, that made me real sick. And I had a fever, and I feel achy all over. I'm getting ready to start to move pretty soon. I'm trying to move around, see how I feel. I'm going to turn my key in at the motel here. The time is now 10:45, and I'm passing through the outskirts of Fort St. John. ...871 miles to Whitehorse from here. Well, that's the end of the pavement now till I get to the Alaska border. It's 83 miles north out of Dawson Creek. That's the end of the pavement. We're on a gravel road now for the next 1,100 miles. I don't feel so much better. I finally had held a glass of buttermilk down, but my stomach sure is sore. Well, the time is now 6:10, and two moose just went across the road about 75 feet in front of me. And I'm getting close to Fort Nelson, British Columbia. Well, the time now is 10 minutes to 10 p.m. in the evening, and I've covered about 380 or 90 miles from Dawson Creek going northwest. I just went and looked at two cars that have met head-on. Jimmy, one of them's a Cadillac, and the other one looks to me like it's a new Chrysler. But those cars are total wrecks. And they say they were all hospital cases that were in the car. It happened the day before yesterday right here at this place I stopped. It's called Summit Esso Service Station. This is the summit marker at Summit Lake, and the snow-capped hills all around here at 4,240 feet elevation at this point. And these are all snow-capped peaks around here, and the snow runs down just a few hundred feet from this lake. It's laying in all the valleys. This is a beautiful green lake. Looks like it's cold, and the temperature is getting awful a lot cooler here. Well, I just saw another link here. He ran out in the road here about 20 feet in front of the car and looked at me and then got back out of the road. The time now is, we're at a time zone change, and the time is supposed to change from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, I believe. But we've entered the Yukon territory out of British Columbia on the Alcan at mile 580 something here. I'm at contact Crick service station, mile 590, Yukon territory. I don't see any sign of life around here, so it must be 1 hour advanced to 6 o'clock. That's what it would be. Well, I just filled with the most expensive gas station on the whole Alcan trip. It's 67 cents a gallon at this place. That's pretty darn dear for gas. And then when I pulled out of there, I went and got a drink at his spring. And down the road about a mile, I see a cow moose and a calf running across the road in front of me. I'm on my way again. The time now is 8:05 on the new time, and I stopped at a nice little restaurant here. And they have a Phillips service station here, and this is a real clean little place. There's a couple of three ladies run it, and they had very good hot cakes and some marmalade. And the coffee was excellent. I either get my appetite back, I guess, and I had a little visit there. Now I'm on my way again. There's quite a long period of time that I haven't had anything to report on the tape. I'll describe the road here. It's gravel road now since I've left Lake St. John, and I'm on my way now toward Whitehorse. This is a little rough in spots. There's lots of loose gravel, and there's some pretty blue flowers along the road, little bluebells, and some other kind of blue flower. In fact, there's three different types of blue flowers along the road here. I haven't seen any game for quite a little while. And I'm passing one of the canal pipeline camps, abandoned camp here. And there's not very much traffic this morning, and the time is now 9:30. This is the correct time at this point on the road. I've adjusted my clock accordingly. There's a lot of beautiful blue flowers, though, along this road, and it's slightly raining, just a tiny bit. Not bad, just enough to settle the dust. I got no dust problem. Time now is 9:44, and I've passed mile 700 out of Dawson Creek, heading towards Fairbanks. I'm making excellent time, considering the gravel road. I'm not exceeding the speed limit. And I see some beautiful little lakes down in here and streams, a beaver dam. Everything is going along nicely. The mountains here are very pretty. Of course, driving a road like this, you can't do too much rubbering. I'm just passing mile 715.5, and Mr. Young, this is your creek. It's named Young Creek.
I just seen a rescue with a helicopter from a plane or from a car on the highway at about mile 794 a few minutes ago. Now the car is taken off, evidently going towards Edmonton, Whitehorse, as fast as it can go. At 12:45, I passed mile 800, and I've now crossed the bridge over Tazalina Lake. There's quite a village here. There's a lot of boats and airplanes, quite a lot of people. I just passed an old-fashioned cowboy with a string of horses, herding them along the road. It's been raining quite hard for the last 50 miles here. It's getting kind of mucky. And I'm about 100 miles from Whitehorse. The time is now 4:20 and I'm coming into Whitehorse. There's lots of beautiful wild roses along the road and some of those blue flowers that I've been seeing. It's cloudy, but not raining here. It's bone dry. The time now is 1 hour change again. I lost another hour, so it's 5 o'clock, and I'm having the car washed. And what's the name of this place here? What's the name of this place? It's 5 right now.
5 o'clock.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What does he call it?
Whitehorse.
The Whitehorse Car Wash? Well, they did a real fast job, huh?
Steel Street Car Wash.
And what's your name?
Mike.
Mike, and the other boy?
That's Ed over there.
Ned, all right. Now I'm going to let you just...
This is Sunday morning, July the 7th, 1963, and I'm at Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, and I photographed the river boats and the old Yukon Historical Society's museum here. The big copper nugget. The little White Pass Yukon sleds and engine, and Sam McGee's cabin. And I've reloaded my cameras, and the time is now 5 minutes to 8 in the morning. I got up kind of early to take these pictures. Well, the time is now 9 o'clock, and I've had my hotcakes and sausages and coffee, and I took a few more pictures around here in Whitehorse, and it's a little cloudy and overcast. The few I talk to intend to go on through to Dawson City and down that way to Fairbanks. The time is now 10:15, and I've left Whitehorse on the road to Dawson City. I can see the beautiful scenery is an awesome sight that would have induced Robert Service and many others to write prose and poetry about this wonderful country. But the things of the past are gone. The worn-out boot and the broken wheel are a thing of the past. Now we see an old wreck of a car or an old worn-out tire in this modern day. I can understand driving along this morning. It's a little overcast, but the beautiful fireweed, the flowers, the scenery, and the green as it can be, and I can also see the fire damage from some careless hunter or accidental, probably, but fire does enormous damage to the country, so a person should be exceptionally careful with fire, as the old-timers were that lived most of their lives out here. They were not careless like the present day person that comes through here, has never been away from home, and they make one of these trips and they just don't realize the hazard they carry with them. I think they should be reminded. This is a gravel road. It's fairly smooth. We prayed for these kind of roads some 30 and 40 years ago,
And there's people today that don't appreciate the improvement and the easy things that we have. So I'm rolling along here at the standard speed limit of 60 miles an hour in a new modern car. When my forefathers walked on foot into this wonderful country. I just spotted a muskox over here in the trees. He's not in a good picture taking position, but he's a very woolly looking animal. There's some patches of very pretty wild roses here, the little pink and red and pale, real pale pink wild roses. Some of them are still in bud at this elevation here. Down a little further, they were all out in bloom and the petals falling off. There are fields along the road here. It's built like an emergency airplane strip, is what I think it is. And this is covered with little white and yellow and fireweed and flowers of all colors in here. Just a thick bed of flowers to land in with an airplane. This portion of the road along here is as good as any boulevard. It's just as smooth as the top, and it's kind of a reddish brown material used on this. And it's really smooth, just like a boulevard. Believe it or not, I just come out of the clouds into the sunshine, and boy, this is beautiful. Everything's so bright, the flowers are bright, everything's bright along this road now. And I'm about 80 miles out of Whitehorse right now. And it's 104 miles from Whitehorse to Carmike. And that'll probably be my next place. I stopped here and took a picture of this beautiful green mountain with all the vegetation on it. It isn't worn down and barren. It's got lots of green trees and brush and grass on it. I just stopped at Carmike's here and filled with gasoline. I got off a lot better mileage, I think, this trip up to this point. And I'm on my way now to Pelly River, about 70 miles, to visit old Van Bibber. I just took one picture of the bridge across the Yukon River here at Carmike. Well, I stopped and took two or three exposures of the Whitehorse Rapids, the rocks where the boats in the early days used to go through, and they still do a few of them today. Well, I stopped at the halfway house, halfway between Mayo and Whitehorse, and had coffee and a little stew, and it was good. But boy, I'm losing my appetite traveling. Now the road here is quite wide. It's a well-kept road, and it's in a little gravel top, but it's good. The piece I come off of was like pavement. Well, this is just as level, only that it's got a little gravel on it, and you couldn't ask for a better road to travel on. It was raining a slight bit a couple of miles back, but now it's all dry and sunshining again. There is some clouds, and I'm getting close to Pelly River. There's just lots of little blue flowers in the woods here. There's loads of them, and so I took one picture of the blue flowers. Now I'm at the Pelly River Roadhouse, and I took a picture of the roadhouse as I come in here, and these folks have been very nice, and I'm going to ask the lady her name on here.
Mrs. Nelson. Mrs. John Nelson.
And you were telling me that you'd come about your life here in the United States.
Well, not directly here in around Pelly, but when we lived in Atlin. My husband and I used to be prospecting, and I know I have been